Charge is with us a little bit earlier than usual. We may turn this into a thing. We'd prefer to turn this into a thing because we like talking to him for a longer period of time. And this is a very sought-after guest. Paul Charchian with us, as he is every Thursday during football season, the king of fantasy podcasts, Fantasy Football Weekly and CHOP. You can get those podcasts anywhere you get a podcast, at Paul Charchian on X on Twitter. So before we get into fantasy football discussion, it was a Monday night football game, so I know you watched it. What's your reaction to Jaden Daniels? So far,
so promising, right? What I love is that, and we've talked about him every week, and I was bemoaning that they weren't opening up the downfield passing for him yet, and felt optimistic that it would come. And I thought Cliff Kingsbury, understandably, was giving him a lot of short stuff just to build confidence, get some completions, let your guys do things. You and I lamented that Terry McLaurin wasn't involved. It was just so great to see it all come together. That deep right sideline touchdown pass was just glorious. Not only was the pass terrific, but Terry McLaurin, a fantastic job. We need, we need other people to step up more in this offense, and maybe that'll come around. I don't see a path to other people really meaningfully stepping up, but maybe there's more there. Maybe we're going to get a little something out of Luke McCaffrey. The Eckler, losing Eckler is not trivial to this offense. I loved what I had seen from Eckler, and you don't just like give that role to Brian Robinson. You're just not the same guy. And I think it'll be fascinating to see what Cliff Kingsbury does to try to overcome some of that. And I wonder if Zach Ertz isn't going to get a lot of that, 5, 6, 7, 8 yard downfield stuff that Eckler had been getting, a lot of short catches. And I wonder if Zach Ertz isn't going to see some extra use here this coming week.
So I'm going to ask you the same question that I just asked callers, because I'll set it up by saying 3 games is way too early to declare anything about anybody. Jaden Daniels is the answer. Caleb Williams isn't. It's 3 games. We're NFL fans lifelong. We understand how these things change and can change on a dime. So my belief is, while I am, Charch, the biggest Jaden Daniels fan and have been for over a year, he was the guy that I wanted all along. I still would say it's too early to know for sure that they got it right. But the question that I ask callers, and I'll ask you, is when is it okay to say they got it right? How long does it take? Is it a week 7? Is it a year 3? I'll give you my answer in a second, and it wasn't a quantitative answer. But what would your answer be to that question? You're an NFL historian in many ways. You know the ups and downs of young quarterbacks. When will it be okay to declare they got it right?
Well, okay. First, I'm emotional about these things. I'm an emotional guy. I tend to view and live in the moment. And I think in this moment, if the Bears could do it again, they would change their pick. And I base that on primarily the poise and composure of the two people involved. Caleb Williams doesn't, he still looks like he's trying to figure everything out on the fly. Jaden Daniels, he looks like he's been doing this his whole life. Just the composure level, the poise, some of those intangible things that don't always get better. Those things to me all point towards Daniels. To answer your question more specifically, I would say for me, approximately this time next year, about 3 games in, like right now, Will Levis to me is not, I think we can pass judgment on Will Levis. This thing is not going to work out. I give me 3 weeks into his sophomore year. I don't see anything coming from Will Levis. That to me is a sign of a player that I don't think is going to necessarily get better. I'm worried about other young quarterbacks, Anthony Richardson, others. But I mean, just the reasonable answer is, okay, if you're going to start these kids as rookies, then and for their whole rookie year, I think they probably deserve the right to get better over the entire offseason and get at least a few games into the sample size the next year to see what we've got. So I would say about this time next year is when you could feel really good with like 90% accuracy on establishing the career path for these guys. And I don't think you'd find a lot of examples of players who struggled for an entire rookie year, played most of their rookie year, struggled, and then struggled through three or four games of their next year, and then it still came together. That would be, I think that would, those would be outliers. I don't have any examples for you.
Well, I mean,
what do you think?
You know, last week, weekend alone, I mean, Sam Darnold, Andy Dalton, I mean, we saw the resurgence of Geno Smith. I think Baker Mayfield, I think we count these guys out way too early in general, and I think we've been reminded that of that in recent years. I think what the real outlier is the Patrick Mahomes, the Dan Marino starts to their career. My answer to the question, by the way, is I'll know when he faces adversity. I don't think you can really measure anybody until, you know, they're under the gun. People are calling them out for a couple of bad performances, a couple of bad plays and in losses. Let's see how he handles those moments, because right now, you know, he didn't face any real adversity at LSU other than a bad defense, and right now he's got the same bad defense. But that's my answer to the question, because Dan Marino, Patrick Mahomes basically threw six touchdown passes and no picks in his second game. I mean, it started great in year two, and it's never stopped. You know, Dan Marino, the same thing. Once he started, man, it was obvious he was brilliant, and if you were waiting to see something else and waiting to see him face adversity, he didn't start facing adversity until the question about can he win it all started to pop up, and that's 5, 6, 7 years into his career. Most of the greatest faced those moments. You know, Peyton Manning threw, what, 28 interceptions in his rookie year? So I'm waiting on that. Maybe he'll be Mahomes. Maybe he'll be Marino. And maybe what we saw Monday night is just going to get better, although it'd be hard for it to get better than what he did Monday night.
You know, where I differ from what you just said is this. Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith is a very different storyline than what we're talking about as rookies and when we can start to evaluate rookies. Those are guys that were basically flushed from their original teams, sometimes the second and third teams after that, and then had a relatively late stage resurgence to their careers. And I don't think that's relative to this conversation about when can
that's
we start
fair.
Evaluating.
How about Josh rookies? Allen? Would Josh Allen be a better example of a guy that people were questioning well into his second year?
Yeah, that's a very fair example. And deep into his second year, right? I think the whole first 2 years were really sketchy, and then the third year exploded. They brought in Stephon Diggs, and, you know, it all clicked for him. So, you know, that's a great case study of where, you know, of somebody who got farther along and then became truly great. But we're also talking about, when you're talking about Mahomes and Josh Allen and Dan Marino, we're talking about Hall of Fame level talent here too.
Yeah, right.
But you don't always know it in the moment, right? You know, Jaden Daniels might be a Hall of Fame level talent. We don't know for sure.
So, I don't know the answer to this question, but you and I talked about this last week because it was a major NFL topic, which was where are the touchdown passes? Where are the passing yards? I actually didn't follow the storyline, but it seemed to me that passing yards and touchdown passes were up in week three. Is that right or wrong?
A little. We're still languishing, though, by a lot compared to previous seasons. The quarterback play way, way down. You know, we're looking at in passing yards way, like, incredibly down. You know, these numbers are not scientific. This is just the top of my head. Typical NFL week, we've got 4, 5, 6, 300-yard passers. This year, we're getting 0, 1, 2. That's it. It's bad. I mean, Caleb Williams, who we were just bashing right now, is 17th in passing yards. The quarterback play is just, there's so much bad quarterbacking out there. Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, Anthony Richardson, Justin Herbert's play, Jacoby Brissett. It's been, you know, Bryce Young already benched. It's been a really rough year for passing output. And the tight end position, by the way, you want a languishing position. Oh, just absolute disaster with all the so-called sure thing tight ends just going belly up, injury, bad performances. That whole position just killing fantasy managers.
Was the most prolific passing year of, say, the last 10, the pandemic year, 2020?
don't know, maybe.
Because I just remember it was such an advantage offensively for road teams because there was never any crowd issues.
Yeah, so back then.
Didn't everybody light it up in 2020?
We did. So, Mahomes was there. Your leading passer in 2020 by yardage, Deshaun Watson. Watson was number one. We still had Tom Brady in the league. We still had Matt Ryan in the league. We still had Aaron Rodgers operating at the height of his powers. Russell Wilson was still good. Philip Rivers was in the league and finished 10th in yards in 2020. So we still had some of those really great veteran players. We're still there and performing at a high level in 2020.
Well, I'm assuming that Sam Darnold right now is the number one fantasy QB, right?
He currently in fantasy points right now.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't run. So, I mean, that's where, fourth. And the guys in front of him are Josh Allen, Jaden Daniels, and Lamar Jackson because they're rushing and the rushing touchdowns count more and faster than passing yards do in most fantasy.
So where is Daniels right now on your quarterback rankings fantasy-wise?
That's a great question for this particular week. I'll pull this up at fantasylife.com where you can get all of my player rankings available every week, including guillotine-specific rankings. I have Daniels at quarterback 4 this week. 4.
Wow.
I know.
Fantasylife.com for player rankings.
Yes.
Who's number one?
Kyler Murray against your team, and I don't have to explain why.
No, you don't. Historically bad right now. I talked about this on yesterday's show. I don't know if you follow the Aaron Schatz DVOA metric, but Washington's three-game start to a season, eighth worst in 45 years of that measurement. And yet the only team with a winning record in his top 12 of the worst defenses of all time over the first 3 weeks. And he essentially says you really can't get out of it and you can't become a playoff team or a playoff contender without greatness at quarterback. And he, asked the question, does Washington have that? Doesn't look bad so far, but we're not making declarations after three games. All right, let's talk about tonight. How good is Malik Nabers fantasy-wise?
Oh, geez. What a stud this kid has turned into and so quickly. You just don't see players that do what he's doing through three games, what Nabers is doing, that don't turn into superstars. I mean, just the track is right here. He's the league's most heavily targeted receiver. Kevin, he's averaging 12 targets per game.
He ranked 18 here 2 weeks ago.
Right. He ranks number one in air yard percentage for any team. He's eating up 48% of the Giants' air yards. He's top 10 in end zone target percentage. You saw the play. He's got superstar caliber body control, separation. In this game tonight, he'll be matched up probably for a lot of the game against Stephon Diggs' brother, Trayvon Diggs, the cornerback for Dallas, who was great 2 years ago, but then he lost last season to ACL. That'll be a fascinating one-on-one matchup. But Malik Nabers right now looks like just an every week no-brainer in your lineup starter, and just he's on a path for superstardom.
Is he your number one receiver, player rankings-wise?
No, he is. Let's take a look. Malik Nabers right now. It's going to be in that conversation. He is number 8 right now. Number 8 right now. Marvin Harrison against your team, number 6. Maybe I need to move that
Basically, you got the backup tight end in Arizona as a start against Washington's defense. By the way, McBride may not play.
He may not play, and it's funny you say that. I've got Trey McBride in a bunch of leagues, and so I am looking at the backup tight end if I have to pivot that way. That is probably what I'm going to do rather than try to find
who's the backup tight end. I don't even know.
He scored actually a touchdown 2 weeks ago. It's Elijah Higgins is your backup tight end. And not the name you need to know, but against your team in a pinch, that's a plausible starter. The other guy I like, Michael Wilson, their other starting wide receiver, right? Basically anybody. What we're saying is basically all the starters against your secondary.
Not a good matchup. If you've got Prescott, what are you thinking right now?
Well, I'm pretty optimistic right now in some ways. The running game has been terrible, and so Prescott's throwing a lot. And the catches, though, I don't think defenses are not going to be respecting Zeke and Rico Dowdle for much longer. And I think that part worries me. What Dak's done a really good job with, Kevin, he's been able to find all his secondary and tertiary receivers in a way that he hadn't been in the past. We're seeing, you know, CeeDee Lamb is obviously awesome, and you know he's getting plenty of targets, but you know, Brandon Cooks, Jalen Tolbert, Jake Ferguson did not figure to be big parts of this offense, but they really have been, and Dak's ball distribution has been fantastic. So that's the part I like about what the Cowboys have been able to do with Dak Prescott, is get real production out of players other than CeeDee Lamb and not turn their offense as one-dimensional as it was last year.
I mean, this is crazy to ask, because after the first week in preseason and joint practices, I mean, Daniel Jones was completely written off. Not that he hasn't been before, but has he resurrected himself a little bit as a fantasy player in particular?
He has. You know, the Vikings, that week one loss to the Vikings looked really bad. At the time, everybody thought the Vikings were terrible and that he lost this bad defense. Turns out the Vikings might have the league's best defense, or second. Steelers are the best. Vikings might have the second best defense. In the two games since then, Daniel Jones has completed 65% of his passes. He's thrown 4 touchdowns, 0 picks. And the thing that has shocked me as much as anything, he's looked really nimble despite coming off that ACL, running well. He's getting dialed up for 6 designed runs per game. Did not see that coming. Those things help fantasy use. And Dallas is the opponent tonight. They've allowed quarterback rushing touchdowns in back-to-back games, so the running might be a factor here. Daniel Jones, if you're in a spot at quarterback, and a lot of people are right now because of the bad play, he's not off the board as a potential helper tonight.
What do you think about my quarterback, Patrick Mahomes? Is he still just an automatic default starter?
Nope. Not at all.
No?
No. And the big problem is, the downfield passing is, like last year, the downfield passing is not there. Get this. Passes over 15 yards. And when we think of Patrick Mahomes, Kevin, we're thinking about these long downfield completions, because that's what he gave us for the first, whatever, 4 years of his career, signature plays downfield. On passes of over 15 yards, Patrick Mahomes ranks 27th in attempts and 15th in completions. That's killed him. They thought Xavier Worthy and his deep speed would unlock more and better downfield passing. That has not materialized yet. And Worthy's only 3 games into his career, so it could happen. Get this. If we go back to week 8 of last year, Kevin, that spans 11 regular season games, which is a meaningful sample size in the NFL. Do you want to guess how many times Patrick Mahomes has been a top 10 fantasy quarterback since week 8 of last year?
0.
1. Yeah. That's it. Week 8 of last year, his average finish is quarterback 16, which means most leagues are 12. That means more often than almost every time, you'd have been better off starting somebody else over Patrick Mahomes.
Well, my somebody else is Geno Smith. What do you think of him?
He's played well. I'm shocked at how well he's played. And by the way, you know, and the play last year wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. But Geno, I think Geno has looked better than hoped. I think they knew what they were doing when they got rid of Shane Waldron, and now he's in Chicago with all the various problems.
And some people are blaming him, by the way, for Caleb Williams' start, saying it's super complex and too complex for, you know, a first year starter. But go ahead, I digress.
Geno Smith leads the NFL in completion percentage, and he's doing it behind a battered, lousy offensive line. He's throwing
Jaden Daniels leads the league in completion percentage. I know that. It's over 80%.
All right. I'm sorry. He's at 75%. And honestly, I was assuming that was number one, because at 75%
you should.
Is normally number one. That's usually how this works. You know, he's not lighting up fantasy box scores, but he's been pretty darn good with a touchdown pass in every game. And the last couple of games, the yardage numbers have ticked up. He's just turned into a really solid player at age 33, Geno Smith.
You know what? I always, when you watched him throw, it looked like a competent NFL passer. You know, he's 6'3", 6'4", and stands in that pocket, and he can gun it, man. He's got a big-time arm. I don't know what it is about him. I shouldn't have liked him because he went to West Virginia and I'm a Terp. But I always, for whatever reason, thought if he gets in the right kind of system, I always felt that way about Darnold, too, for some reason. I'm happy for Geno Smith. We'll see. They've played nobody, right? It's the, you know, they played a depleted Dolphins team. They beat up on the, they barely survived the Patriots. And what was the opener that they had? I'm forgetting now. Denver, maybe?
Denver. Yeah, it was Denver in the opener. Yep.
Yeah.
And they,
All right, so back to just overall football questions. Go ahead.
Do we have 3 minutes?
We do. We've already run long.
I know you're better. My favorite bet that I've unearthed of the entire regular season is tonight, so I want to tell you about it.
Okay.
Devin Singletary against the Cowboys. And the way I would angle this is I would ladder bet over 60 yards, over 80 yards, over 100 yards. Anytime touchdowns, plus 105. First touchdowns, plus 600. First, some love for Devin Singletary. He ranks number one in missed tackle rate in the NFL. 41% of his runs with a missed tackle rate. He's correspondingly ranks number one in total missed tackles. And he's one of the NFL's few remaining bell cow runners. Non-Singletary runners in New York are only averaging 3 carries per game. And he's the only one who touches the ball from inside the 5-yard line. No other runners touch the ball from inside the 5. But here's the thing. Dallas, get a load of these running metrics.
Oh, it's terrible.
They ranked dead last in run defense by Pro Football Focus, and it's not close. They ranked dead last in run defense success rate. They're last in rush defense EPA. They're last in rushing yards allowed. They're 26th in missed tackles. Dallas has allowed 6 rushing touchdowns to runners. That's the league's most. And if you throw in quarterback rushing touchdowns, now they're at 8 rushing touchdowns allowed. It is staggering how bad this Mike Zimmer-led run defense has been for Dallas. And Singletary, I think, just people don't realize how good he's been. And that is a very strong play tonight.
I like it. I'm not a big prop bet guy, but I love Singletary. I loved him coming out of Florida Atlantic. I think he just has always had that really good vision, and he should still be in Buffalo, really. What was I going to ask you? Oh, two things. One, I mean, it's only week 4, but Dallas has to win tonight, right? I mean, have you seen what they have coming up? They have Pittsburgh next week on the road. Then it's Detroit at home, the 49ers on the road, the Falcons on the road, the Eagles and the Texans. And then they play Washington, and maybe we'll be good, you know, when they face us. This is must-win territory. I'm not saying he'll fire McCarthy if they lose tonight. Jerry doesn't fire coaches in season.
No.
But this is – they better win this, or I think their season goes south.
Has it already gone south?
Maybe.
I mean, it's already happened, and we don't know. It is early, but man, and the Cowboys' offense has been okay. This defense is brutal, and I'm telling. And this thing's gonna be way closer than I think people realize. Again, Giants have looked like a legitimate team in back to back weeks, and honestly, more legitimate than the Cowboys have the last 2 weeks. I do not share your optimism that this is an automatic game for Dallas just because
I'm not optimistic at all. It would not shock me at all if the Giants win tonight. It wouldn't shock me at all. I just think it's an absolute have to have for them, or this thing snowballs out of control. All right, I got 30 seconds. Here, I wanted to ask you this because you are a Minneapolis, you're a Twin Cities guy, you're a Vikings guy, and I saw the news that Tommy Kramer was diagnosed with dementia.
Yeah.
That's sad, and wish him the best. I was curious, though, for Vikings fans, after Tarkington, who's the next guy? Is it Kramer?
It's Cousins and then Kramer. You have to go to the 80s for Tommy Kramer's era, but he was the starter for 8 or 9 years here.
Yeah.
And he played well, got the team into the playoffs, but never really got them, you know, advanced through the playoffs. He had a strong arm, a lot of moxie, and he would get absolutely hammered after every game and go out to bar hopping. This town is legendarily filled with people's stories of drunk Tommy Kramer after games and stuff. And that really became, sadly, a defining part of his life. And for the 20 or so years, 30 years since his playing days ended, and only recently stopped drinking and sort of got his life kind of, you know, kind of back together again. Sad story. And man, he took some beatings. There was a play for Tommy Kramer that I remember as a kid from the mid early 80s. He got hit hard on a sack and he convulsed on the field. He had a seizure on the field and it was like nothing I've ever seen since then. And it was terrifying in the moment.
Yeah. But the most polarizing quarterback of our last 10 years and your last five, you think would be number two behind Tarkington?
Yeah, because it says a lot about we just haven't had a franchise quarterback here in Minnesota. We might, right. Maybe we do now. Maybe it's Sam Darnold. Maybe it's J.J. McCarthy. We don't know. The Vikings have a fact. If J.J. McCarthy continues at this pace, and right now he's one of two guys in the MVP conversation. If he continues
Darnold,
at this pace.
Not J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, Sam Darnold. Thank you.
Yep.
The Vikings have a fascinating offseason decision to make. Like, do you franchise Sam Darnold? I mean, what do you do then? How do you leverage that into some kind of equity as a return if Sam Darnold's on your team? I don't know. It's cart before the horse. It's only week three. But if this continues, it'll be a fascinating situation.
I also think if they continue to have a good season, it's going to be a very interesting look at what, when you have a guy who's really good but not elite, but you're paying him several of those years like he's elite, it may not be the best way to go, because what they were able to do with the money they didn't give to Kirk, Greenard, I'm missing the other defender that they paid big money to.
Danielle Hunter was let go. I'm not sure.
Right, Van Ginkle. I love what Van Ginkle's done. Van Ginkle, Greenard.
In
the additions. Yep. I mean, they basically got four or five major contributors out of Kirk's money, right?
Yep. Yeah. And I wanted them to keep Kirk, but not at what he signed for the Falcons. I mean, the Falcons gave him, elite quarterback money and a four-year deal, which was nuts.
Right. Thanks, as always. Enjoy the football. Talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
We got somebody coming on to talk Arizona Cardinals next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.